Political Pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, offering new and used vehicles to help Mainers explore the beauty of their home state. Learn more at leeauto.com.
Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz, along with Maine Public's Chief Political Correspondent, Steve Missler, and Senior Political Correspondent, Mal Leary. Well, pundits, pollsters, politicians have all been weighing in on the candidates and the races in this November's election. But let's find out today what our two reporters have been observing firsthand in the election process. Mal, you've been to your local polling place for some early voting. What's going on there?
Well, I actually have already voted. I'm one of the many thousands of people in Maine that have already cast their ballot for this election. There was a lot of interest in early voting, at least here in Augusta, of people showing up. With the COVID-19 precautions, it's gotten really crowded at the polling place because the early voting is done at City Hall. There's one location. It's in a room down the hall from the main entrance to the building. And of course, with all the 6-foot markers, you can only get so many people in. So immediately you go to having people waiting outside to get into the building, to get into line. And what really struck me was several people showed up with their ballots all filled out. And instead of putting them in the lockbox, which was right there at the entrance to City Hall, they insisted on waiting in line so they could hand their ballot to the clerk. And to me, that shows there's a lot of unrest out there among folks who are worried about early voting and whether their vote will get counted or not, so much so they're going to wait in line and actually hand that ballot to the clerk instead of going through a much quicker process of just dropping them off in the drop box.
What he observed is what I think I've sort of expected to happen. I think Democrats generally, you know, they made this big push over the summer for mail-in ballots and voting by mail. And then all of a sudden we had all these problems with the Postal Service, delays in delivery. And I think those stories about those delays, I think, spooked a lot of people. And then there's a smattering of stories about the lock boxes. Are they secure? And can people get into them and this and that? You know, people, I think, are just nervous. They want to make sure they have their vote count. And it's not surprising at all that people would actually hand their ballots to the clerk. I mean, that's exactly what I plan on doing when I vote. I'm going to hand my ballot to my town clerk as well. So, you know, what Mal observed is exactly reflective of that anxiety about the election and having their votes count.
Yeah, well, we can make it unanimous because I was over at the town hall to file my absentee ballot. There's a drop box right outside the town hall. And as we were walking up to it, my wife was wondering whether somebody could actually just kind of grab it and haul it away. I mean, the fear, actually, and that's really the right word for it, is really quite prevalent out there. One of the other developments, you know, it's political sign times, but perhaps, I guess, some kind of award has to go to these Trump Collins signs, Steve, that have cropped up. Talk to us about that.
I haven't seen these in the 2nd Congressional District, but in Southern Maine, what you're seeing are these signs that say Trump Collins. And initially you're going, that's odd, because as we all know, Senator Collins is trying to keep the president at arm's length, as are a lot of Republicans right now, as the president's poll numbers just continue to tank. Turns out that these signs were actually purchased by the Maine Democratic Party, which is a pretty good troll these days. That, you know, what they're basically doing is linking Collins to Trump. I know that Republicans think this is a dirty trick, but that's an interesting response, because since when is it a dirty trick for a candidate not to want to be associated with the standard bearer of their party? So it's a good troll. But if you're wondering why those signs exist in Southern Maine, it's because the Maine Democratic Party is paying for them.
And I have to wonder how much legitimacy there is here to the Republicans making complaints about those signs, because I've been into the 2nd District and I have seen signs that clearly are the whole ticket: Trump, Collins, Crafts. Just yesterday, I saw one on the road here just outside of Augusta that said Jay Allen, Trump, Collins. So there are signs being put out there by the Republicans that link their candidates together. So I'm not sure why they would be so terribly upset that that's being done down in the southern part of the state with those Democratic paid for signs.
Well, let me throw this out to see if what you guys think. In the last week or so, as the president has had his COVID-19 diagnosis, and as the poll numbers for the president have continued to sink, and as he's continued to say, you know, sometimes increasingly outrageous things, is any of that, do you think, perhaps helping Senator Collins in her bid to separate herself from the president?
You know, obviously the Democrats are trying to basically handcuff Collins to the president. You know, Collins from the get-go has, again, tried to keep the president at arm's length and, you know, won't say if she's supporting him, et cetera. I do wonder if he continues to falter in the polls and looks increasingly grim for his reelection chances, if that's beneficial to her. I think it might be, honestly, because I think what you're seeing right now in the polls in the Senate race is that this race is probably going to be decided by undecided voters. It's basically a dead heat right now. And you have this chunk of undecided voters that is winnowing, but they seem to be breaking evenly for each candidate. Some of the political people I've talked to say that undecided voters will typically break for the incumbent in the final days of an election because it feels safer. If they're not convinced that Sarah Gideon is the candidate that they want, or she hasn't made a good closing argument, those undecided voters at this point, with everything that's been out there in the campaign, may just fall back to Collins. And so if that's the case, you know, certainly having created some distance between a president who may lose and seems to be flailing in the process may end up helping Collins in the home stretch. That is something we should pay very close attention to, though.
I disagree a little bit with what Steve is saying, because I think it's not just the undecided voters, it's ranked choice voting. And when you look at where are those people going to mark a second choice or a third choice, could also be the deciding factor here, as well as that 6% or so, what are we at now, 6 or 7% undecided in the Senate race. As for the separation between Collins, I mean, consistently she's done better than Trump. Now, Trump is, you know, down at 40%, I believe, statewide, and she's at 45, 46, 44, somewhere in the middle. So she has some separation there, doing a little bit better than Trump on the statewide figures.
And so once again, we're seeing a case where TV ads actually started showing up before there was a referendum campaign for the ads to apply to. Now, in this case, we're talking about the proposal that's now being circulated, a citizen initiative to create a public power authority in Maine, but about a couple of weeks before they even got their petitions into the Secretary of State for approval, we started seeing these ads, Steve, you know, in two parts that say, do you think a government takeover is really a good idea?
What we saw is that the Central Maine Powers PAC, which was engaged and combined with Hydro-Québec over the corridor issue, which didn't make the ballot, those two entities, those two companies spent $20 million, which is insane. That's way more than the most recent, the casino referendum from a few years ago, which was over $10 million. And that was the record at the time. You know, this is double that, and it's not even on the ballot. What you're talking about is CMP is very concerned about this public power proposal that's not even on the ballot. There's basically circulating petition signatures to get it on. CMP is staying engaged on that right now. So they basically transitioned from, you know, trying to defend the corridor from a referendum vote to this public power plan. And so that's, you know, those, they're going to keep churning out that that what they're calling it is issue advocacy. There's no ballot question yet. And so CMP is going to continue to keep rolling, which is good news for all the consultants that they've hired for sure. And that issue, of course, will be in the legislature next year. And so there will be a lot of lobbying on that. One thing I will add to this, though, is that it'll be interesting to see how that lobbying is actually recorded as it relates to Hydro-Québec. I did a story a year ago about how there was a lot of meetings with government officials from Quebec. I found this on the Foreign Registration Act disclosures, which you don't typically check if you're in the state house, but it's just a good idea to do that right now. You know, you saw a lot of meetings with the governor's office, with legislative leaders between Hydro-Québec and those people. You know, my question was, wait a minute, isn't this lobbying? Because there was no lobbying disclosed by Hydro-Québec. Hydro-Québec makes the case that they are a separate entity from the provenance. but the province is actually the sole shareholder of Hydro-Québec. So I don't know how you create a distinction between the government and a government-owned power company, but that's one thing we should be keeping a close eye on, especially as the legislature, you know, comes back, you know, in December, because, you know, if they continue to do what they did before, that lobbying won't be disclosed unless you happen to go look on the Foreign Agents Registration Act disclosure portal. So we'll be checking that quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. And I think we can be sure there's going to be a lot of advertising, particularly if they're successful in getting it on the ballot. As they say, history repeats itself. And at one point, the most expensive referendum in history was the Public Power Authority of Maine referendum in 1974.
All right. So lastly, we're coming up on our political debates here on Maine Public. What should we be looking for from the candidates, Steve?
Our debate, I think, is next Thursday. We have all four candidates who have confirmed and will be there. And we're holding it in the Augusta Civic Center for, you know, the appropriate distancing for COVID precautions. What you want to see here, particularly in between Senator Collins and Sarah Gideon, is what their closing argument is. I mean, we're getting to crunch time here. And again, as we discussed previously in this segment, you know, they're running in a dead heat. There was a poll from the Bangor Daily News this week that suggested they're within 1 point of one another. For Gideon, I think she needs to say what she wants to do and make an appeal to these voters who are on the fence about leaving Collins. And maybe they're not quite there yet. Maybe they're thinking about it. She needs to talk to those people. And I'm not sure exactly what she's going to say to them, but I think that she needs to focus on those folks to get this thing over the finish line. And for Collins, she, again, as we pointed out in the stories we've done and profiling this race, is really trying to keep this thing local. And I think that's a very, very smart move on her part, because the more distance she creates between what's happening here and what's happening in the Capitol, especially with this president, is very good for her. And if she can keep that focus over the home stretch, then she's got a good chance to pull this thing out, despite the perfect storm that's aligned against her.
And I think we've got to be looking for, will they actually get out there and start talking about what they want to do for the future instead of talking about the past? And one of the things that struck me on both of the campaigns is they keep talking about their records, and there's not been that much discussion about what it is they want to do for Collins in another term, or Gideon in her first term. One of the things that I know polling has picked up over the years is Maine people say, great, you've got a great history here of what you've done, but what are you going to do for me now? What are you going to do for things that are going to make my life better, my family's life better going forward?
All right, so that Senate debate will be on Thursday, October 15th, and more details are always available at mainepublic.org. Well, that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. We update the podcast each Friday afternoon. Most of it airs on Weekend Edition Sunday, and a smaller excerpt is heard on Morning Edition on Mondays. Do remember to check out Steve's Maine Political Pulse newsletter. You can find it on mainepublic.org and subscribe to have it deposited right into your email inbox. Willis Ryder Arnold produces the Pulse podcast. Music is by Rob Holt. Mal, Steve, thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. I'm Erwin Gratz. We'll be back with you soon.